David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks, and welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 330. I'm your host, Steve Raker, from the Comic Book Bunker, with a May the 4th be with you solo, no, not that solo, special. With Andrew and I just coming back from vacation, not the same vacation, although we did manage to get together on his birthday in Disney World, which was surreal and amazing and a lot of fun. I figured it would be helpful to the guys to give us a little bit of a cushion and put out a short episode of some recent reads and give us a little breathing room before our next episode. You can find announcements about Marvel Noise on Facebook and on Twitter, and you can download and stream current and archived episodes of Marvel Noise on marvelnoise.com. Item: the Baltimore Comic Con is coming. It's October 18th, 19th, and 20th. Now, after New York Comic Con, where it traditionally has been just before. It's the 20th anniversary of the Baltimore Comic Con. Great guest lists already. I mean, really, not lip service. This is the show for comic book talent. It's held at the Baltimore Convention Center right there in the Inner Harbor, and tickets are on sale now. I'll be there. You should be there. Then you can say hi to me. So in honor of the May the 4th festivities, included in my recent reads are over 50 Star Wars books. But first, I want to follow up on a bit from two episodes ago when we did our deep dive into the Avengers Operation Galactic Storm Kree Shi'ar War event. At the end of that episode, I proclaimed my interest in reading some of the follow-up storylines that came over the next several years, some of the fallout from Operation Galactic Storm, and it took me a couple episodes, but I have done so and want to share some of them with you. Now, I know when we're talking about older comics, we tend to go a little bit more into the plot of what they maybe some of the surprises and spoilers, if you will. But for more recent comics, and I do keep this in mind when we're talking about old comics too, our synopsis are never supposed to supplant actual reading of the comics. It's supposed to give you a heads up as to what type of material, characters, and ideas are inside the book. So there's a lot of books out there, right? So anything to give you a guide as to what comics you might be digging or what comics you might feel safe in avoiding is always our goal. Looking at the Operation Galactic Storm fallout in the middle of 1992, right after the Galactic Storm aftermath issue, in Quasar 35 and 36, written by Mark Gruenwald with art by Greg Capullo and Harry Candelario. I mean, so good to see Capullo's early work on this title, especially his take on Quasar's new costume and the starfield in his cape, and of course her, the female version of him, Adam Warlock. In these post Operation Galactic Storm issues, Quasar has quit the Avengers, and he's headed back out to space to investigate the aftermath of the destruction of the Kree Empire and see if he can be of help. I mean, he's the protector of the universe and all, right? So he gets to Hala, and discovers Deathbird, who's now the ruler of Hala and the Kree Empire, and her Imperial Guard, I mean, she's following the same model as the Shi'ar regime does in having her elite guard of superpowered beings. Well, her Imperial Guard here is the Kree Star Force, that group, that motley crew that the Supreme Intelligence had gathered to fight on his behalf. Well, Quasar evades them with a quantum leap. Really, he does. And subsequently discovers a race of aliens who mourn losses of life on a cosmic scale. They travel around from tragedy to tragedy and do their mourning thing. In the afternoon or evening, too. They perform their ritual in honor of the Kree, but in doing so learn that the Kree's souls are in a state of limbo.
Sitting here in limbo, like a bird without a song.
Their souls have been consumed by the enormous Soul Eater being, who was last seen way back in Thor 261 to 263, where he was trying to use Odin's soul for energy, and did for a short time. Quasar's helpless against this being. This being is massive, until he manages to communicate with the Kree souls who are trapped within, and then they resist en masse and tear the Soul Eater asunder. And then the Kree people are at peace at last. In mid-1993, the next year, in Avengers 364 to 366, written by Bob Harris with art by Steve Epting and Tom Palmer, I mean, this is in the midst of that creative team's big overreaching arc that included the Proctor and Magdalene, the armored, mysterious beings. The Avengers at this time are Captain America, Black Widow, The Vision, Hercules, Circe, Black Knight, Crystal, and occasionally some help from Hank Pym. They're now joined by a Shi'ar warrior in these issues named Deathcry, and are soon after attacked by a rogue element of Kree soldiers led by the scarred Admiral Galen Kor. Of the last Kree Imperial fleet, once the most feared armada throughout the known galaxy, that is no longer. Ouch. He wants the Avengers to, of course, pay for their crimes against his people and the Empire during the events of Operation Galactic Storm, thinking them responsible for the Negabomb. These Jokers actually bring their own Negabomb to Earth, but when it's finally set off in the finale, Circe simply rearranges its subatomic particles into, like, a standard munition. Good to have an Eternal on staff, right? Along the way, though, the Avengers fight many a Kree sentry, including Hank as Giant Man, putting down with a Kree sentry, so that's kind of fun. In mid-1994, in X-Men Unlimited number 5, written by John Francis Moore, with art by Liam Sharp and a bevy of inkers, we've got Storm, Forge, Jubilee, and Professor X being, voluntold that they are to attend a formal Shi'ar ceremony where Lalandra will be present on Hala, ruled by Deathbird. That is her murderous sister, of course. On Hala, Jubilee ends up crossing paths with a young teen girl who's part of the resistance to Deathbird's rule and gets caught with them, but they later, in Lalandra's presence, save the galaxy and the Empire. But Lalandra is, you know, part of the order of the stability of what's good for the Empire, and when push comes to shove, she turns them in to her killer sister, and Professor X is all, good day to you then, and leaves her with a big chip on his shoulder. Great art. Awesome to see Liam Sharp stuff, although Forge is built a little bit like the Hulk. Professor X, too, he kind of looks like Bane getting all jacked up. The next year, in 1994, in Avengers 378 and 9, Galen Kor makes another appearance, but the story is more about Deathcry's origins with this super Shi'ar being and everything, and it's kind of kooky. In the end of 1993, we get What If, the second series of What If, that is, 55 and 56, What If the Avengers Lost Operation Galactic Storm? Now, the second series of What Ifs were single-sized issues. Remember, the first series, they were double, almost triple-sized issues that had a big, long feature story and either a backup or would have two regular-length stories in it or even like an anthology. They had room to play. The second series was shorter stories, so you had to get to the death and tragedy a lot quicker. But here they broke it up into two issues, written by Len Kaminsky, with art by Craig Brazefield, John Gazop, Dave Simmons, and Darren Auk. The turning point here, where this alternate reality spins off from ours, is that when Deathbird is sent to assassinate the two Kree rulers, Cap spots her and stops her. This prompts the one leader to take advantage of the situation and slay the other, then poison the Supreme Intelligence, making him the lone monarch figurehead in charge of the entire Kree Empire, and he rules with an iron fist, and they destroy the Earth in front of Cap, and commit other acts of terror, including completely subjugating the Shi'ar Empire and its people. In the second issue, it's years later, and Cap and company have to regroup and form a new Avengers in the remains of what's left of our Avengers and Imperial Guard of the Shi'ar, and they have to fight to take down an empire. And clever, at the end, both Wonder Man and Vision are mortally wounded, so they supplant Wonder Man's dying consciousness into the Vision, which, you know, for the second time. Then in mid-1998, post-Onslaught, post-Heroes Reborn and Heroes Return, we have the four-part Live, Kree, or Die arc that ran through Iron Man number 7, written by Kurt Busiek with art by Sean Chen, Captain America number 8 by Mark Waid and Andy Kubert, Quicksilver number 10 by John Ostrander and Edkin, and art by Derek Aucoin, and Avengers number 7, written by Busiek with art by George Perez. Here we've got Galen Kor and company, working with a now-revived Supreme Intelligence, setting up operations on our moon, and they set out to get their revenge against the Avengers. The stronger story, though, is the subplot throughout the four issues regarding Carol Danvers, who is Warbird at the time. This is before she retakes on the Ms. Marvel mantle and then ultimately the Captain Marvel mantle that she enjoys today. Here, though, she has really hit rock bottom as a character. She's going on missions drunk. She's in complete denial to every attempt to help her. The team has a big intervention and eventually votes her off the Avengers by the time the arc is done. Kind of heavy stuff, given the places they've taken the character since. In the end, Galen Kor and company are no more, and the Supreme Intelligence is taken into custody. Well, they kind of build a prison around him there on the moon, but he's cool with that because he would like some human company, somebody to chat with while he's soaking up our culture and plotting. All right, and from time to time, we take a look at the recent arcs of the Marvel Star Wars books. They received much fanfare when Marvel got the license back, and those first several storylines in both the Star Wars and Vader books were so darn entertaining, but I think some of the attention has been reduced regarding this line. I mean, there's a lot of comics out there now, too, but really the main three books, Star Wars, Darth Vader, the second series, and Dr. Aphra, are still strong titles, and we like to catch you up on what's been going on in those books. Again, not to substitute for reading them, but to let you know if the arcs matter to you, you know, if it's something that you are interested in, or if it's something you feel comfortable skipping and waiting for the next set of arcs. Remember, the Star Wars books here take place in the main title between A New Hope, Episode 4, and Empire Strikes Back. So it's before they've lost Han and all that, and the Rebellion is getting its legs under them. The main Star Wars title is written by Kieran Gillen, with art by Salvador LaRocca, under really nice David Marquez covers. The Salvador LaRocca art, I was hanging in there for a while, but these likenesses are not doing it for me. They're creepy in their attempts to be so dead on, and you know, the starship and space battles and tech and stuff like that is done real nice, but LaRocca is wearing thin on me as far as his art, really taking me out of the story at times. I also really prefer to read the Star Wars titles in chunks, you know, waiting for arcs to be finished, and they do a good job for each arc in naming them and giving them chapter numbers so that you can get a sense of the beginnings and the ends here. In issues 44 through 49 of Star Wars, Mutiny at Mon Cala, we have Luke and Leia looking for alliances for the rebels and possible bases of operation. They hope here to win over Mon Cala, which is Admiral Akbar's race. And he's there too. And they want to secure the Mon Cala's large space fleet and their ability to create more space vessels. Leia hopes to rescue their king from the Empire's clutches, and while they reach him, he's on a respirator and on his last gasp, and after speaking to him, when they are attacked there in his chamber, prison/hospital bed, stormtroopers burst in and mow him down in an attempt to get Leia, and that event turns the Mon Calamari people, and Akbar gets the opportunity to show that he is a pretty formidable both leader and military man. In issues 50 to 55, entitled Hope Dies, one of Leia's alliances goes bad, and the resulting betrayal leaves the entire rebellion at the Empire's mercy, of course, of which there's none, and it's just this space battle royale with the Millennium Falcon playing an important part, of course. Issues 56 to 61, The Escape, is written by Gillen with art by Angel Unzeta, and Luke, Leia, Han, and the droids escape the Empire and crash land on the moon Hubin. And there they meet this mysterious host who comes on pretty much just like Lando in both appearance and character type. He's this charismatic leader who's got a smile on his face and seems like he's on your side, but his motives are questionable and he's got a secret. He's a warlord here with a daughter, and it does turn out that they have our heroes' backs, and he even dies protecting them. Who he's protecting them from is the Scar Squadron. Remember that group of elite stormtroopers? They've been one step behind our heroes all along, and when they do catch up with them, they seem like a pretty formidable commando squad, but our guys seem to get the better of them each time so far. But how can their luck hold out? Well, the Scar Squadron here ends up getting stranded on Hubin when our gang steals their ship. And it's fun because I think I forgot to mention Hubin's natives are these large Wendigo-like beasts, so the Scar Squadron's gonna have their hands full for a while. In the Darth Vader series, this being the second series, which takes place during Vader's early days, where he's building his reputation amongst both the Empire and the galaxy, and he's wiping out his rivals and pretty much being sent by the Emperor to take out fugitive Jedi. In issues 11 and 12, Rule of Five by Charles Soule and Giuseppe Camuncoli, Vader is sent to take out a Jedi in hiding, but it's a trap, and an assassination attempt is made on him. So he's got to figure out where this is coming from, and he traces the trail back to Coruscant, back to the Senate building, and ultimately takes action against his adversaries there. In issues 13 to 17 of Darth Vader, entitled Burning Seas, we have the king of the oceanic Mon Cala being advised by a Jedi in hiding. Vader and his crew are sent to find and take out the Jedi, but the Calamari King floods the entire surface world and quite substantially delays Vader's efforts. The finale has Vader and the Jedi facing off with the inevitable conclusion, but there are some cool twists along the way, including an additional focus on the rivalry and relationship between Grand Moff Tarkin and Vader, which gets further explored in the standalone issue 18, which features Camuncoli layouts and Danielle Orlandini finishes. A lot of Mon Calamari action here between the Burning Seas arc of Vader and the Mutiny at Mon Cala arc of Star Wars, but it was kind of cool, like I said, to see Akbar doing his thing and earning some cred. There's also been a round of specials that continue on now, first being the Age of the Republic, where there is a standalone one-shot that has is an anthology of three short stories and then a series of one-shots. Started out with the Age of the Republic special that had stories involving Mace Windu, Asajj Ventress, and Captain Rex with Jar Jar Binks. Then there were at least eight that I read, one-shots that followed, all written by Jody Hauser. There was the Age of the Republic Padme, Age of the Republic Anakin, Age of the Republic Obi-Wan, Age of the Republic Qui-Gon, all drawn by Corey Smith and company, then Age of the Republic Count Dooku, Age of the Republic Darth Maul, Age of the Republic General Grievous, and Age of the Republic Jango Fett, all drawn by Luke Ross. I found all of these to be enjoyable, and there was no common thread between any of these one-shots other than the time period that they take place in, being, you know, before Luke and Leia's time, and that they were all written by Jody Hauser. And they have moved on now, at the time of this podcast being recorded, to the Age of the Rebellion, where there was a special issue with three stories, one featuring IG-88, the robotic bounty hunter, one involving Yoda on Dagobah before Luke's arrival, and one featuring Biggs and Porkin. No, not a comedy team. Or are they? There's also been two one-shots, each written by Greg Pak. There was Age of the Rebellion Leia, drawn by Chris Sprouse, that involves Leia in the bounty hunter guise that she wore, you know, before the Jabba the Hutt Han rescue, and a Grand Moff Tarkin issue drawn by Mark Lamming. These have been very enjoyable. Good character studies and opportunities to look back at other aspects of the characters' histories and stuff, especially Tarkin. It seems like they're building up. The annuals this year, or last year I should say, in 2018, I found disappointing. The Star Wars, Vader, and Dr. Aphra annuals, whereas a couple of years ago the annual number ones were cleverly tied to the ongoing stories that were happening in the monthly issues, 2018's annual number twos were pretty much just extra fluff that honestly can be skipped entirely, which is my recommendation, Nuff said. But to end on a good note, the last two arcs of the Dr. Aphra series were certainly enjoyable. Now, Dr. Aphra is the female scoundrel, archaeologist, thief character who is original to this second era of Star Wars comics at Marvel. She started off as a resource that Darth Vader was using on his personal mission in the first Darth Vader series, but she stuck around and has a solid title of her own now. In issues 14 to 19, which contain the remastered story arc, which is by Kieran Gillen and Cy Spurrier with art by Emilio Leazzo, and really beautifully colorful covers by Ashley Witter. Here, Dr. Aphra finds herself again running up against a female Imperial officer that she met and outsmarted in a previous story. Now she's, like, openly taunting slash flirting with her, all while still getting the best of her. Unfortunately, now, however, Aphra is being blackmailed into working for a cruel new master, the murder droids 000 and BT. These droids, previously that were under her control, are sadistic, psychopathic mirror images of C-3PO and R2. It's quite unsettling, but can be humorous at the same time as you read 000's dialogue with the C-3PO inflections and voice. Aphra and her team are sent out on missions to recover items for the murder droids, the big heist being to recover 000's missing memory bank data from the heart of the Imperial server, which is quite a task to undertake. But she manages to do so and also escapes from her droid masters, but hooks them up with the data and doesn't tell them that she encrypted it. Issues 20 to 25, Catastrophe Con, is written by Spurrier with art by Kev Walker. This arc finds Aphra imprisoned and part of a convict commando squad, the tech of which the prison and the spacesuits and stuff, because nothing in the Star Wars universe is new and shiny, right? It's all old and beat up and looks like scraps and rusted out. Kev Walker does an awesome job depicting this stuff. Well, both the Imperial former officer, now rogue lady slash love interest, and Dr. Aphra's ex, Sana Staros, are both trying to free her. One of them to rescue her, the other one as bounty. Then the murder droids attack because they're also trying to get to Aphra to get the encryption code. And the Empire shows up. Vader even, swinging his red lightsaber left and right. Aphra and company have to try to escape, and by the way the ending takes place, it looks like she's going to be paired with 000 for a while. Uh-oh. Good stuff, though. I really enjoy that book. You never really know where it's going or who's going to live or die. All right. There's over 50 Star Wars books, plus the fallout from the Operation Galactic Storm. Next episode, I'll get Kevin and Andrew back on. We'll find out what they've been reading. So, until Leia finds another French food to model her hair after, make mine Marvel. Later.